Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast. It's almost time for training camp, just a couple of weeks away. Mark Schanowski joined by Kendall Gill. Later on, we're going to have Kevin Bulldog Anderson. We're going to have five burning questions for the Bulls heading into training camp, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But first, we're going to talk about the presumptive favorite in the Eastern Conference. That would be the Boston Celtics. And to help us get more on the outlook for the Seas heading into training camp, it's our pleasure to welcome in A. Sherrod Blakely. He is the Celtics insider, NBA insider for NBC Sports Boston. Sherrod, how's your summer going?
So far, so good, but it's coming to an end, which kind of sucks. But the positive is that means the NBA season is about to start up. And this, I mean, I'm excited about this season, not only because of the team I cover, but just, you know, there's so many different storylines going into the season. I think all fans, whether your team is going to projected to win 60 games or projected to win six games, you're going to be excited about this season.
We heard a few weeks ago Danny Ainge saying that Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward have been cleared full scale. They're good to go, five-on-five basketball, no restrictions starting training camp. But realistically, can you expect these two guys, all-star players, to hit the ground running and being exactly where they were pre-injury?
I think Kyrie is going to be pretty close to where we saw him at the end of the season before he had the metal removed out of that surgically reconstructed knee of his. I think Kyrie is going to have a huge year, because you got to remember that when he missed the entire playoffs, it wasn't because of an injury per se. It was because he had that metal removed. It was an infection. And so he doesn't have the kind of the structural rehabilitation concerns that most guys who are coming back from an injury would have, guys like Gordon Hayward. I think it's going to take Hayward a little bit more time to really get into a flow, get back to the guy that we saw in Salt Lake City, who was an all-star in his last year there. But Kyrie, I think Kyrie's going to hit the ground running, and I think the Celtics, you know, they're going to follow his lead.
Sherrod, now I'm going to ask you a tough question.
You've
probably been asked this a million times over the summer. You got Hayward coming back, Kyrie coming back. Now, Brown and Tatum had excellent playoff experience this year. Somebody's not going to be happy because there's only one basketball.
Tatum's going to be a superstar.
And Tatum is going to be a superstar. How do the Boston Celtics work this thing out?
Well, I think there's a couple things you're going to see. I think you have to go back to the beginning of last season when they decided to go with that starting five and the roles that those guys had. Jaylen Brown was looked upon to be a two-way player, more of a defensive-type, limit-type guy, and get points here and there, whereas Tatum was on the floor, and people are surprised when they hear this. He was starting because of his defense. We didn't really know how good a player he could be at the offensive end of the floor because, frankly, they didn't need that from him. I think you're going to see the Celtics do a lot of mixing and matching with those two guys. But I think they're going to be okay because they understand what their roles are going to be. I think that one of the advantages that they have is because of their depth, because they've got so many guys who played last year. You might see Kyrie Irving average less than 30 minutes a game. You're probably going to see Gordon Hayward average less than 30 minutes a game, which makes them a better team in the long haul because you have guys that are going to play fewer minutes and they're going to go harder in those minutes because they know they're not going to be out there 35, 40 minutes a night. So I think it's not going to take as big an adjustment as I think a lot of people think, simply because the guys most affected, and we're talking about Tatum and Brown, they understand that they're still young, they got a lot to learn, and let's be real, Hayward, Kyrie, they're better players. And I think those guys are, at this point, they're better players, and I think, you know, Tatum and Brown, they're going to embrace whatever roles they're asked to play and do a good job in that.
Well, Kendall played in the league for 15 years, and I think you know sometimes young guys get impatient, don't they?
Sometimes young guys get impatient, especially when they've had good playoff series, especially when they've gone up against the best player in the league and done a great job. I hope that Brad Stevens can make this thing right where everybody is happy. But I tell you what, if he can do it, he's my coach of the year.
Well, the one thing, I'll say this, though. Usually when we see, you know, young guys who come into the league and they really show what they can do early on, there's usually no obstacles in their way. I mean, like, if you put Tatum on, there's maybe three or four teams in the NBA where if you put Tatum on that team, he would be their best player. So that, I think, in itself is a little bit different for the Celtics, because they've got two young players who would probably be the first or second option on a lot of teams, but because they're part of a Celtics squad that, you know, on paper should be the favorite coming out of the East. And when you look at what they did this offseason, which was basically bring the band back together for one more tour, I think they understand that their roles are going to be a little bit different. And if you're being honest and real, you know, more than half of this roster is going to be either restricted free agents or free agents in the summer of 19. So I don't see Boston bringing everyone back for a second tour. And so even though they may have to take a step back and not be as impactful at both ends of the floor this year, there's a high probability that those guys are going to be, you know, two of their top three or four players next season.
I want to get back to Kyrie. Obviously, I'm sure you've got a chance to know him over the last year, his first season with the Boston Celtics. We all know about the story about him leaving Cleveland. I mean, I don't know exactly what's truth and what is kind of exaggerated about him wanting to be the man on his own team and maybe chafing a little bit by playing, you know, in the considerable shadow of LeBron James. But, you know, he goes to Boston, he's putting up huge numbers, and of course he got hurt before the playoffs. Now, you know how the NBA rumor mill works. There's talk that he's got his eye on maybe New York or mm-hmm. Brooklyn, and he wants to team up with Jimmy Butler somewhere. I mean, there is the potential, if things don't go well, that you think you might have to worry about a Kyrie Irving who starts to have that wandering eye thinking about what's going to be next in his career?
Yeah, I think if you're the Boston Celtics, you have to be on guard for that. And it's more to do with how things ended in Cleveland. You know, I think a lot of people forget how things kind of developed there. I mean, Kyrie had signed, you know, a max rookie extension with Cleveland, thinking that it was going to be his team. He was going to be able to kind of really develop as a player, as a leader, and all that kind of stuff. And then 48 hours later, oh, guess what? LeBron James is coming to town. Yeah. That is a huge blow to the ego, because and for him, I think that's part of the thinking and why he's not, you know, committing as much to the Boston Celtics as I think a lot of people expect him to. He did that already, and guess what? He got bamboozled. He got hooked. He got bamboozled because he went into thinking that I'm going to be the man, and then they said, oh, by the way, you're really good, but you're going to have to be next to the man, and the man is LeBron James. He does not want to have a repeat of that, and let's be real. If you look at the Boston Celtics, there's only one player out there that they could potentially trade for that could probably, one, would be available, and two, they have the assets to go out and get if he becomes available, and that's Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And guess what? If Anthony Davis came to Boston, Kyrie, you will once again find yourself as the second in command. And mm-hmm. so if I'm Kyrie Irving, I would totally play this the way he's doing now, which is keeping all options open. Because the minute you commit to the Celtics sooner than you have to, you're running the risk of finding yourself in a similar situation in Cleveland where you're on a good team, but you're not in the position of leadership that you believe that you've earned a right to be in.
Is this interest in New York legitimate, or is that a media creation?
I think there's some interest, but it's not nearly, just from the people I've spoken with, nearly as great as we in the media make it out to be. I can tell you right now, the New York Knicks, he is their number one target. I've spoken with people within that organization. They have made it absolutely crystal clear to me that if they had their pick of guys that are going to be in the free agent market this summer, Kyrie would be their first, second, third, and fourth choice if they had to make it. So he is a guy that they definitely want. I don't think the interest on his part is as significant, but the one thing that, you know, when I spoke with people with the Knicks organization, they told me was that that's why this season is so important for them, because they can't just roll out there and win 25 games and expect Kyrie to come there. They have to be competitive. They have to make a push towards, you know, one of those last playoff spots to have any shot at landing Kyrie Irving. And once they do, if they're able to get into the playoffs, and they're able to make a trade and get a guy like Jimmy Butler, then all of a sudden New York becomes a much more attractive destination. But I think ultimately if the Celtics have the kind of season that they're supposed to, it's going to be very difficult for Kyrie to walk away from that, particularly when you have a situation where you're the face of the franchise and but you don't have the pressure night in and night out to carry the team, because you're going to have Gordon, you got Tatum, you got Brown, you got Horford. You've got a ton of talent around you that they, as important as you are, you don't have to put the team on your back every single night. And the one thing, I'll just add this one point, too, that I don't think a lot of people realize. When you think about the Celtics and you think about the fourth quarter, you always think about, you know, Irving and his points scored and all that. But you know what? It was Terry Rozier who led the team in minutes played in the fourth quarter last year. So, again, this past season, I think, really prepared Kyrie for possibly having a smaller but more impactful role this year, because they laid the groundwork last year with Rozier getting a lot of those fourth quarter minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Now, tell me this. What is the secret to Brad Stevens? We know that most college coaches that make the jump to the NBA, they don't really do as well as Brad Stevens has done since his tenure for the Boston Celtics. What is his secret, and how does he get these guys to play for him?
You know what? That is a great question, and I've asked a lot of people this summer actually about that. And a couple of people brought up a point, and it makes a lot of sense. When you think back to the college coaches that have come into the league in past years, they joined teams where, you know, they had 23, 24, 25-year-old players that they were dealing with, or older than that. You look at the guys that Brad Stevens is dealing with, they're basically the same kind of kids that he would be dealing with if he were still at Butler. I mean, you're dealing with a 19-year-old Jaylen Brown, a 19-year-old Jason Tatum. You know, Robert Williams, he comes and he's another 19, 20-year-old guy. The guys that, when you look at the way that their team is being built, a lot of those players are guys that Brad can relate to, because they're literally the kind of guys that Brad, as a college coach, will be relating to. And then you got older guys like Kyrie Irving, who's in that, to me, he's in that weird zone where he's sort of kind of young, but damn, he's got like 5-6 all-star appearances under his belt. He's only like 25, 26. He's a young, accomplished guy. And Brad has established a good rapport with him. And I think with a guy like Kyrie, coming in to Brad's system after Brad has been here 3 or 4 years, he has already proven that he's a good coach. And so Kyrie is a little bit more accepting of what Brad has to say. Whereas if Kyrie were on his team when Brad was in his first or second year, I don't think things would have gone quite as well as they have. And so I think, again, those two factors, his improvement as a coach year after year, and the fact that a lot of the core guys that are going to be instrumental in them doing well are the kind of guys that Brad will be trying to recruit to Butler. And the guys that, from an age and maturity standpoint, are players that he's accustomed to working with. So really, it's just basically dealing with the same maturity-wise players at a much higher level, obviously.
We're talking with Aisharod Blakely. He's the Celtics insider for NBC Sports Boston. We'll let you go on this one. Obviously, you look at the Eastern Conference picture and the three Atlantic Division teams, the Celtics, the Raptors, and the 76ers appear to be at the top, 1-2-3. You've got Milwaukee and Indiana that maybe are going to be fighting for that fourth spot. How do you handicap the Eastern Conference race? Do the Celtics look like a pretty strong favorite in your mind?
They are. I mean, they're the favorite. I think there's no doubt about that. You know, Sports Illustrated recently came out with their top 100 list, and the Celtics had six players on that list, and Golden State had six players. They were the only teams that had that many players on that list. So I think that speaks to how those two respective teams are, I think by all accounts, are expected to have a collision course. But to me, Toronto is the team that I, if I'm the Boston Celtics, am the most worried about, because they have experience, they have talent, and they've got a guy in Kawhi Leonard. If he's able to play at the level he did before injuries, he gives them a different dimension that makes them a very, very tough out come playoff time. Indiana is another team that I would be very concerned about if I'm the Celtics, because I just think they're flying just below the radar, and I think they're really good. Milwaukee, as you mentioned earlier, they're going to be good, but I think those two teams, Toronto and Indiana, are bigger threats than I think the prohibitive threat being Philly. I just don't think Philly's ready. Ben Simmons, great player, but if you can't make a jump shot outside the paint, you know how that is. The tougher it becomes to do the things that you do well. You have to have counters, and for him, it would be like having a mid-range jump shot. we can't say he's a bad mid-range jump shot shooter because he doesn't shoot them at all. And that concerns me if I'm a Sixers fan. Not that he's missing them. He's not taking them at all. You're not going to be able to get to the rack at will if you don't start showing the ability to put some stress on the team defensively by knocking out open mid-range shots.
Well, one thing we can all agree on, we're glad that guy that wears number 23, LeBron James, is playing in the West.
That's right.
Give somebody else a chance to get to the finals from the Eastern Conference.
There was a lot of celebrating throughout the Eastern Conference when he decided to pack up and head out west.
Absolutely.
The Celtics will never admit it, but they know they love it. They know it.
Yes.
Well, it should be a lot of fun, especially in Boston for the upcoming basketball season. Sherrod, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you when you come to the United Center when the Celtics visit, and we'll be following your work at NBCSportsBoston.com.
Sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
That's Sherrod Blakely. Coming up next on the Bulls Talk podcast, we'll be joined by our good buddy Kevin Bulldog Anderson. We got five burning questions about the Bulls heading into training.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Whether you're on the go or stuck at work late, don't miss a second of your Chicago Bulls. All NBC Sports Chicago games, including pre- and post-games, can be live streamed on the NBC Sports app. Wherever you are, you're there.
Back on the Bulls Talk podcast, joined by our good friend Kevin Bulldog Anderson, who's been busy all summer working Rocket League, E-League sports.
It's been a while.
Whirlwind. But now we're ready to get down to the main event, the NBA season.
And it's funny, we're in this really like dead period in the league.
Yeah.
And I think we're all feeling it. Like we just missed the game.
Yeah, we got a Rodney Hood signing, and that was big news.
Yeah. Like we just
took the qualifying offer.
But it's funny, like I can't wait for media day.
Yeah.
You know, it's
almost here.
It's less than 2 weeks away, and that is the unofficial start to the season, right?
Yeah.
Then we'll get preseason games, and before we know it, season will kick off, and we've got a 8 to 9 months ahead of us. But I cannot wait.
Well, we appreciate all the people who are loyal followers of the Bulls Talk podcast. I know we hear from you on social media all the time. We appreciate you listening. We know you're looking forward to training camp. So to get you in the mood, I've come up with five burning questions about our beloved Bulls heading into training camp, and as you might guess, Jabari Parker is going to be involved in this, as is Zach LaVine.
How did I know?
The two restricted free agents who signed the big money deals this offseason. All right, here's burning question number one. Kendall, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Can Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker become the dynamic offensive players that they were before they damaged their knees with the ACL tears?
Absolutely. Here's the reason, because they're both trying to prove something. They're both trying to say, listen, the ACL injuries are not going to have any effect on me whatsoever, because I've had, in Jabari's case, 1 year now to 1 year now to rehabilitate the knees. They both had another summer to get their skills back together and everything they had offensively prior to the ACL injuries. So I think offensively, you know, a lot of people say that, hey, Lauri Markkanen is going to be the number one option. I don't think Lauri Markkanen is going to be the number one option. I think it's going to be Zach LaVine, okay, Lauri Markkanen, and then Jabari Parker.
Because, Bulldog, some people forget that Zach LaVine, before he got hurt this last year in Minnesota, was on a track to becoming an all-star, averaging about 19 points a game, shooting 38-39% from the three-point line. And people were talking about him in the same breath as Andrew Wiggins as to who's the better player. Now, you know, if he can come all the way back, the Bulls are going to get really good value on that contract.
I'm going to agree with Kendall with the caveat. Yes, they can both become elite players again, but not on the same team together.
Oh!
Wow.
The problem is that you've got marketing, like you just said, the order of hierarchy on this offense is going to be
LaVine. He's got to be the number one option.
Marketing,
right?
Parker, right?
Yes.
I think we are going to get an all-star caliber season out of Zach LaVine this year.
I agree.
We're going to get it. In regards to Parker, I think he can become the elite offensive player, and I think he would if he were on a different team. I just don't think there are enough touches in this system, especially when you factor in Chris Dunn, to have Parker become that elite offensive player again. Is the skill set going to be there? It probably is, but I'm not quite certain we're going to see Parker average more than 16 a game this year.
Well,
that's not bad.
16 is good.
Yeah.
You were not elite, though.
16 will get you that $20 million that's
because he's probably on the other side only going to play about 28 minutes. We'll talk about the minutes in one of our follow-up burning questions. As Kendall knows very well, there are two ends to the court. You got to play offense, you got to play defense. And people are worried about the fact that some of the metrics, the advanced analytics show that both Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker are not great defenders. So, burning question number two, start with Kendall. What can the Bulls do on the defensive end to compensate for Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker being subpar defenders on the perimeter?
They can't do anything to compensate for that.
Come on now. You can't slide some help over?
No. I'm saying they can't do anything to compensate. What they have to do is have developed Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker into better defensive players.
Right.
That's it. Zach LaVine, believe me, he knows that in order for me to make the All-Star team, I have to come back to Chicago as a two-way player. That means I have to play both ends of the floor. No more of this, letting guys go by me or me just playing one end of the floor. I got to take the onus upon myself to become a better defensive player.
Remember, it's interesting, during Summer League, Fred Hoiberg said they were working on some defensive concepts that they were going to use. And it's kind of like, yeah, we'll funnel everybody to Wendell Carter Jr. and he'll block everything at the rim. I don't think that's going to hold up for 82 games. Do you, Bulldog?
The Matador defense, it just funnel guys to Carter have him have a block party.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, but in Jabari's case, he knows that the spotlight is on him defensively. So all he has to do is just put forth the effort.
Here's the biggest issue with Parker defensively. Mm-hmm. Is guarding, like, he's not playing the four. He's not guarding opposing fours. Mm-hmm. He's guarding the three spot.
Right.
And Zach is a good on-the-ball defender. It's his team defense that he needs to work on, which, as you know, you can learn
if you practice and
put in the effort.
Yep.
So Zach has the ability to be a good defender. Is that going to translate to playing every play in solid defense, like taking the Jimmy Butler mentality defense?
It has to. And you know, he wants to be the face of this franchise. He's been hearing Larry Markkinen. Well, when he first got traded here, he's the centerpiece of the trade. I think that he still wants his name and his face up on the marquee of this franchise. And in order to do that, he has to be Jimmy Butler-like on the defensive end.
And David Anwab is not walking through this door.
Right? No, he's in Cleveland. Signed a one-year deal. We got that officially.
Who wants to go to Cleveland?
Well,
Anwab does.
I'll tell you what, both him and Rodney Hood are there.
Yeah,
And so in terms of defensively how they can compensate for it, you put Dunn on their best perimeter offensive player on the opposing team,
yep,
which Dunn's a plus defender.
He is.
And you certainly, it's funny, but you need to have Carter get significant playing time if he's going to compensate for these defensive issues.
Playing time. That leads us to burning question number three. Kendall knows this very well. You can't play 12 guys because then everybody's unhappy. No one's getting into a consistent rhythm. Yeah. So you got to find your eight or nine that you're going to ride with. Mm-hmm. So burning question number three. How will Fred Hoiberg handle a logjam of players at power forward, center, and the two wing spots? I mean, you look at power forward. You got Markkanen, who's going to play big minutes. Mm-hmm. You've also got Bobby Portis, and I think they'll probably try to steal some minutes for Jabari at the four. Then you got Robin Lopez, who's going to want to play, and you invested a high pick in Wendell Carter Jr. at the center spot, and you're still paying Chris Felicio all that money. He probably thinks he should play, but he's probably not going to. The wing spots, you got five guys for two spots. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be tough. How does Fred Hoiberg handle the rotation issues?
Well, the one thing, I admire Alan Bristow, who I played for in Charlotte for this. Before the season, he brought everybody into a room, and he gave everybody their marching orders. This is your job. Yeah. This is your role on the team. And we knew that from day one. I think that Fred Hoiberg needs to do that. And then you can establish a pecking order. Everybody knows what their job is. And then, you know, if you have a player that is improving and one that is not, then you bring those two into a meeting together and explain why this guy's going to get more playing time, more of your playing time.
Yeah.
I think when the leader is up front, and that being the coach, then everything, you can work everything out, you know. But if you're not up front with the guys, then that's when you start to have the problem.
We cannot have a repeat of what we happened a few years ago with Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
We cannot
do that.
A situation in which Fred says, Joe volunteered to take a back seat, and Joe says, I never did that.
Yeah, that's
so,
a problem.
Because where you are in that exact same situation with Robin Lopez, the players you mentioned with Felicio never seeing the floor, I think in most situations,
unless there's an injury.
Unless there's significant injury, that I think the guy who is the odd man out is going to be Lopez. And Lopez took a back seat in the second half of the season last year and was not happy about it. Yeah. As a veteran player, he thinks he earned more, and he certainly
you
has.
You think he starts opening night?
I think he starts opening night. I think he starts through the first quarter of the season. You know, and then you work Wendell Carter in there slowly but surely. Because, yeah, Carter played great during Las Vegas Summer League. However, now you're playing against the real boys. You know, I don't think he'll do as well as he did in Las Vegas Summer League. But then again, he may surprise. You know, I would love to have a rookie of the year here. I don't know about you guys, but, you know.
But then you've got the three spot. You got Jabari. You got Holiday. You got Hutchison. Denzel Valentine can play some 2-3. I mean, how do you handle minutes for those guys?
I think the majority of those minutes are going to what they said is going to happen, and that's Parker.
Yeah.
Even though we all know he's not ideally set for the three, I think they're committed to doing that because of the logjam at the 4 and 5. I think you will, like you said, see him steal minutes at the 4 in certain rotations. But I think he will get the majority of the minutes at the 3. He'll certainly start at the 3. And I think in terms of the players you mentioned, I think they're going to really ease Hutchison along.
Right.
I don't see Hutchison getting more than 10 minutes a night for the first 3 months of the year.
Remember, Denzel Valentine says he should be a starter on this team.
He did.
And now he's fighting for backup minutes at the 2 and 3. And let's not forget Antonio Blakeney, who had a good summer league. They signed him to a regular NBA contract. And he probably thinks that with his dynamic offensive skills, he should be in the rotation as well. Yeah. That can be an issue if you got too many guys that think they're the ones that deserve to be on the floor.
It's going to be an issue, but like I said before, define their roles day one.
And
let them know exactly what you expect of them. And if you should play, like in Denzel's case, if he should play his way into more minutes, then so be it. Then you tell the guy who he's taking minutes from, listen, we're going to give Denzel a little bit more minutes. You know, but as long as you're up front with the guys, they can handle it.
Let's be honest. The face of the franchise right now, 1A is Zach LaVine and 1B is Lauri Markkanen.
Yes.
Everything is going to funnel through them offensively and minutes-wise in terms of they are going to be getting their spots.
I agree.
And then everybody else could have to take a back seat. And then Kendall's right. You cannot go into the season with Fred playing even a 10-man rotation.
No.
I know we want to see what we have in Hutchison, and certainly you've got Valentine who thinks he should get more playing time and Holiday as well. But to be effective, it needs to be an 8-man rotation.
Well, there's minutes at the Windy City Bulls as well, so maybe we'll see if they use that as an outlet.
Oh, no.
Well, that leads us to burning question number 4. Now, as we just described, there are position battles all over the court. The one place there's no position battle is at point guard. Chris Dunn, entering his third NBA season, is the unquestioned starter. He'll be backed up by Cameron Payne. They also signed the former Michigan player Derek Walton Jr. as a training camp invite. But this is Chris Dunn's position to run with. So entering his third year, he had some injury problems, of course, at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. Kendall, what are realistic expectations for Chris Dunn?
I think the realistic expectations is to see what you saw last year, a little bit of scoring, a lot of defense, some flash on when he comes out. And he surprised us a few times with his ability to go to the basket and finish. But I think that the expectation that Fred Hoiberg has for him, as well as the organization and us, is his ability to show better basketball IQ and not turn that basketball
into crucial
situations. Mm-hmm. That's the expectation for him. If he has that on his mind going into training camp, you know, I think that he can become a hell of a player at the point guard position. But that's the one key to him, Bulldog.
And the important thing is defining his role, right? Yeah. Like, this is not a team that needs Chris Dunn to score 15 a night. Mm-hmm. You don't even need to score him 12 a night. You need him to run the offense, make smart decisions, push the tempo as often as you can with the athletes they have on this floor, and take care of the basketball. We need him to make it's the reckless, not even careless, it's the reckless turnovers that he's got to eliminate completely. Yeah. And if we get in a situation in which he's making reckless turnovers and they're off to a bad start, his playing time is going to suffer. In terms of expectations for him, I think we're going to see him ascend to a top 7 to 12 point guard in this
league. That's pretty good. There's a lot of good point guards.
Yes, there is. I think he's not going to be top 6. He's not.
No.
There's way too many guys up there that are elite.
Yeah.
But I think it's realistic to really expect him to be in that 7 to 12, more likely that 10, 11, 12 top point guard. He's got the ability, certainly on the defensive end, he has the ability, and I think he can be there. Don't expect him to score 20 a night or even 15 a night, but he can run this offense.
You know what you just described? Rondo. So Chris Dunn's name should be Rondo.
I don't think he's going to accept that role. I don't think he's going to be real excited about that, because the point guard has the ball in his hands. You can say that you want him to be a facilitator all you want, but he's the one who's going to be making a lot of
decisions. Can Chris Dunn hit his free throws?
I believe he can. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he showed improvement last year. You know, he showed improvement last year with his jump shot. Everybody said that he couldn't shoot, but, you know, and Vincent Goodwill said this, and this guy can't shoot, but I saw him knock down a lot of jump shots last year.
Well, then he's not like Rajon Rondo.
He should know about not being able to shoot.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know what? Not like Rondo. Maybe Dunn will reach out to Ray Allen if he has some shooting tips and needs, because we know Rondo's not doing that.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah, they're still telling those stories as he went into the Hall of Fame last week. All right, yeah. Final burning question. A lot of people have high expectations for the Bulls this season, including my partner Kendall Gill, who's thinking that they can contend for a playoff spot in a watered-down East with that with that guy LeBron now playing out in L.A. But they've got so many guys in the rotation under the age of 25, very little NBA experience. So question number five is, can a team with so many young guys realistically be expected to contend for a playoff spot?
Boston did it. And the best player on the team last year was a young guy. And Tatum, he should be, a sophomore in college. When I was with the Charlotte Hornets, me, Larry Johnson, and Alonzo Mourning, we got us to the second round in the playoffs. And we were all under the 23. So I think that this Bulls team is talented. They have a good mix of young players, veterans. And I think with the leap that I expect Zach LaVine to take, the leap that I expect Lauri Markkanen to take, Chris Dunn, then you throw in Jabari Parker, I think most definitely they can contend for 8 or 9, especially since King James is now in the
league. Well, 9 doesn't help you.
I mean, I'm sorry, 7 or 8. I'm sorry.
Hey, we're going for number 9.
Hey, listen, I'm thinking Big Ten. You know how they expand all of the teams now. You know, I'm in my Big Ten.
Adam Silver's not realigning. It's not going to be top 16.
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, 8.
They will be playing meaningful basketball in March.
Well, that's a cop-out, Bulldog. Come on now.
I'm hedging my bets. Here's the reality of it. They have the talent. We know they have the talent, and certainly if they stay healthy, they'll have the offensive ability to score a lot of points. Defensively, they're an absolute mess, and they're still going to be in the bottom 2 or 3 worst teams in the league defensively, no matter what they do out there. All the pressure is on Fred Hoiberg this year. There is a massive amount of pressure for him to put this together. And certainly, can they realistically contend for a playoff spot? Yes. 38 wins will probably get you, that's 8 seed.
You'd be in the running for it at 38.
You're in the running. Will they get 38 wins? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think for that last spot, you're looking at the Pistons, you're looking at Charlotte, you're looking at the Bulls, and you're looking at Cleveland. I think those four teams are all going to be in that 35 to 42 range, and we'll see which team it comes together for. Hopefully that's the Bulls. I know that our partner Will Perdue thinks they could win 50 games. So, we'll just scrape him off the ceiling.
I wasn't going that far. Yeah, I wasn't going that far.
He's really excited about that.
He just got married, so he's giddy.
He just got
right
married,
now.
Yeah. Congratulations right now, to Will and his lovely wife, Megan. They're honeymooning.
This week.
Yeah, he's on his honeymoon.
Yes.
Hey, before we get out of here, we're going to have a new concept this year, Bulls Outsiders. That's going to follow the Bulls post-game show. Tell us about it, Kevin.
So, Bulls Outsiders is a concept that our friends at NBC Sports Bay Area came up with 2 years ago. Certainly, they're riding the wave of the Warriors and their coverage, and they felt like they wanted to do something in addition to their normal post-game show. And they started very much similar to a lot of people are familiar with the Starters on NBA TV.
Right.
The concept is very similar there.
Fun show.
It's a atypical look at the game, at the teams, and at the league. Last year, our friends in Portland started it with NBC Sports Portland with the Blazers Outsiders, and it worked there too. And so anybody can say, well, it worked in Bay Area because you've got a 70-win team anybody's going to watch.
Well, we've got the most knowledgeable basketball fans
here. We've got the best fans here in Chicago, and we absolutely do. And so Thursday night, we have our in-studio auditions. We have 8 fantastic fans coming in who are going to vie to be on the show. And we are going to pare that down to probably about 3 of them to be on Bulls Outsiders. And so this is going to be for all 82 games. We will take the same approach we're taking with the postgame show, is that right after the pregame show, we're going to do Bulls Outsiders. And it's going to be after the postgame show, we're going to do Bulls Outsiders. And essentially, it's a professional fan, super fans look at the team. They're not going to break down X's and O's because that's what Kendall and Will do. But they are going to take a fan's point of view and look at the Bulls and what they think is going on.
And a heavy social media component where they'll be answering questions, interacting with viewers.
It's a major interactive show. It's going to be streamed on Facebook as well as being on our linear channel, our normal channel after the postgame show. And a big part of it is allowing the fan at home to ask questions. It could be off-the-wall stuff. It doesn't have to be about, what do you think about Zach LaVine's performance tonight? It can be about, all right, best pizza place in Chicago.
Sure, yeah.
So we're going to do that.
Nice.
Starting this October, and we're really looking forward to it. And we're going to have 8 fantastic candidates in Thursday night.
And Bulldog's going to be calling in with Star Wars questions.
Hey, if we were, that's another show.
Okay.
We're going to do Bulls Outsiders. We're going to do Star Wars Outsiders, and I will be hosting that show.
All right, we're officially off the rails. It's time to bring this one to a close. Thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. We can't wait. Media Day at the Advocate Center, September 24th. Look for expanded coverage on all platforms. And once again this year, Kendall, Will, and I will be there for all 82 games, no matter what station the actual game telecast might be. Tune to NBC Sports Chicago for the best pre- and post-game coverage you can find anywhere, as well as what Kevin described with Bulls Outsiders. So until Media Day, we look forward to talking to you. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast.